Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a week involving an unprecedented recount of 2.98 million votes cast by Wisconsin voters for president, which is why we have Mike Haas, Administrator of the State Elections Commission, to give us a few minutes update on that. Mike, thanks. Welcome. Sure. Now, you come bringing news. The agency just got sued. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the agency did just get sued in federal court. We have not formally been served with the lawsuit, but there are two political action committees that are attempting to stop the recount that was just started on Thursday.
Well, how's it potentially going to play out? You're an attorney.
I am. We will be consulting with the Department of Justice, of course, which will represent our agency. For the time being, unless there's a court order, we continue on with the recount.
Well, what are the grounds for them seeking to stop the recount? Just started yesterday.
Two basic grounds that are covered in the complaint, just briefly. One is alleging that the state statutes are not clear enough as far as how to determine the voter's intent on a ballot. The second major grounds are that the voters for President-elect Trump would be disenfranchised because the allegation is that the recount is not likely to finish by December 13th.
Well, just a final question before I give JR a chance. Is this was this lawsuit filed by the Trump campaign?
No, this was three plaintiffs, two political action committees affiliated with the Republicans or on that side, I guess, and then one individual plaintiff named Ronald Johnson.
Sorry, JR.
But not Senator Ron Johnson.
Well,
I want to ask you about that second piece of the lawsuit, because the whole going through this recount process, there's been this chaos theory that the people, that the Stein campaign, by pushing the recounts, trying to create chaos, delay the electoral vote, delay our electors being seated, delay the transition in some way, shape, or form. But on Monday, when you walked us through the recount process, you said that's not, your research suggests it's not likely to happen. Can you tell us why our votes are going to be safe, most likely, no matter what?
Sure. There's a federal law, just briefly, that requires any recount of a presidential race in a state to be completed by the 35th day after Election Day, which would be December 13th. As a practical matter, there are questions about whether or not that would have an impact, because if a recount is not finished, that only means that that Congress is not required to honor Wisconsin's slate of electoral votes. It does not. And then in that case, Congress itself would make a determination about where Wisconsin's electoral votes go, or at least which slate, which party gets to cast them. Given that both houses of Congress are in Republican hands, that would likely mean the same result. In the unlikely event that the House and Senate split on that decision, it would then go back to Governor Walker to decide where Wisconsin's electoral votes go, or at least which slate gets to cast those votes.
Let's kind of set the stage here. The recount came from the campaign of Jill Stein, correct? Who got 1% of the vote. Then she went to court trying to get a hand recount, and the Dane County judge said hand recounting may be the gold standard, but Jill Stein for president campaign provided no clear and convincing evidence that there is some kind of defect in Wisconsin voting machines statewide. The assistant attorney general, all we have here is 100% hypothetical speculation about what could possibly imaginably happen. That is a far, far short of the standard. Were you surprised at the Dane County judge's ruling, Mike?
Not based on Wisconsin statutes. It's a very high burden for a candidate to convince a court to require a hand count. They need to present clear and convincing evidence that a hand count would result in a different result. Would lead to a different result, I should say, and that the voting equipment, the tabulating equipment, was not operating correctly, or that there was some mistake or fraud involved that could be detected by a hand count.
And a quick follow-up question. Jill Stein campaign got about 1%. Okay. Is it too easy for campaigns like Jill Stein to seek a recount? Do we need to change state law?
I think it will definitely be looked at. We've been hearing some legislators indicate that they intend to take a look. It's certainly unusual to have a candidate who came in fourth place and not even close in a statewide race to request a recount. And I think Jill Stein has indicated this is not really about the result. It's about checking the process and checking the voting equipment. And I think it's yet to be seen whether there's going to be any changes, whether there might be some additional threshold before a recount can go forward. Right now, it is very easy in the state of Wisconsin. The candidate simply needs to make an allegation, does not need to provide any evidence or proof that there was any mistake.
Is it too easy?
In this type of circumstance, I think a lot of people would say that there needs to be more presented before. Frankly, all the county and local election officials are required to do all of this unplanned work in sort of a busy time of the year for them.
Governor Walker this morning said the lighting Christmas tree that he would be open to looking at some kind of new restrictions on asking for a recount. It raises the same point about a fourth place finisher being able to request one. One thing I want to ask you quick, Stein campaigns went for forcing a recount by hand, mm-hmm. but I think more than two-thirds of the counties are doing it by hand anyway. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
I believe so. It is a decision for each county recount board to make under the statutes unless a judge is convinced otherwise. And some county boards just feel it's more efficient. Even if you use the tabulating equipment, every ballot needs to be examined. And if you do not use the equipment, you do not have the cost of reprogramming the equipment and all of the procedures that go along with testing the voting equipment again and using it. And so a lot of it depends on the population and just the preference of the county board.
And just can you put in perspective, in 2011 we had 1.5 million votes cast mm-hmm. in the state Supreme Court race. I think wasn't it like after the recount, maybe 300 votes changed?
A little bit over like 300, that? Correct.
So even with 3 million, 22,000 votes is a lot of a very high barrier to overcome in a situation like this, right?
Absolutely. It is. And I think, a recount is a chance to kind of audit the processes, detect mistakes. I think what we're likely to see, frankly, is more human error than any tabulating equipment error.
That recount started yesterday. We're 24 hours into it. Any major unexpected problems or concerns that surfaced in the first day, Mike?
Well, we received calls about, I think, things that we would expect. Some difficulties with determining whether absentee ballot envelopes were completed properly so that the ballot should be counted. There's a new state statute requiring the address of a witness on the absentee ballot. Some of those ballots were counted on election night, even though they should not have been. And so the question has come up now that it's detected, what should the recount board do about that? Just a number of different situations that just require the canvas board to think through what the law is and how to apply it.
But you don't see any reason that we're not going to make that deadline, correct?
We'll have a better idea, I think, after today, after we check in, for instance, with Milwaukee County and Dane County to see what their progress is. Some of the county clerks I have heard from said it's going faster than they expected. Menominee County was the first to finish. Iron County finished in one day as well. We'll see how it goes.
Sure.
You brought the absentee ballots. We saw a kind of an example of that in the 32nd Senate District. Mm-hmm. One of the counties discovered that it was clerk error, that they'd failed to put down the address of the witness, because the clerk was a witness when you voted absentee in person. Do you think state law needs to be clarified or tightened in some way to make clear when those ballots should or shouldn't be counted, if it is, for example, clerk error versus the elector not signing
right.
it?
Right now, those arguments are largely based on prior court precedent, trying to protect the intent of the voter, and if the voter hasn't made a mistake, they shouldn't be penalized. If the clerk made a mistake, that would invalidate their vote. On the other hand, you have statutes where the legislature has said this is a requirement, and the question is that a mandatory requirement or a discretionary requirement? And the canvas boards are making those decisions right now. I think it is something that needs to be clarified either by the legislature or by court action.
And this is the final question, Mike, comes from me. I got to ask this at a social event last night, so I'm just going to take it to you. The Stein campaign sent the state a check for $3.5 mm-hmm. million, dollars, mm-hmm. but are we taxpayers going to pay any part of the cost of the recall? Understand, the 3.5 reimburses mm-hmm. local clerks,
right.
but are we all us taxpayers going to end up paying some of this?
The only potential cost for the taxpayers would be the state costs, our agency, our staff time, and that is taken away from other tasks that we would be doing. Otherwise, all of the local costs should be covered either under the original fee that the Stein campaign paid, or if the costs exceed that, we will bill them. They will be required to pay within 30 days.
The reason I asked, there was this additional $400,000 that explain that quickly.
Well, we asked county clerks in a very short period of time to give us an estimate of their costs. We had a math error when we provided the estimate to the Stein campaign. We told them it was about $3.5 million. The total of what all the clerks sent us was closer to $3.9 million. But our state estimate was not required to be based strictly on the county estimates. And so we think we're in the neighborhood of where we'll end up, and we will see whether there's a refund or an additional bill.
Okay. Mike Haas, Administrator of the State Elections Commission, thanks for joining us. Sure. Now we get thanks a chance to talk to, listen to Charles Franklin, one of the state's premier pollster, if not the state's premier pollster, on why his last Marquette University Law School poll was wrong. He gave Trump 40%. Mr. Trump came in at 48%. Let's listen to Charles Franklin talk about that discrepancy and how he's going to try to reconcile it. Mike.
We have plenty of Trump voters in our sample. Why would we then be missing the 7%? Sweet. That his vote did better than what our last poll said?
Yes.
That's what we're searching for now. We know that on some things, like media markets around the state, we were representing all those media markets in proportion to their actual number of registered voters. But did turnout shift in some of them? That's one thing we'll look at. Is it possible that maybe we underrepresented certain groups in that mix? And the biggest thing still looks like a change in vote. If you look at all the groups we interviewed compared to the exit poll, we are very close to the Clinton vote on almost every one of them, but Trump is systematically 7 or 8 points better in all those groups. So what is it that boosts him that way? Late deciders, we've already mentioned, and conflicted voters who had negative views of both candidates. In the exit poll, that was 22% of the electorate, and they went 60-22 for Trump.
For Mr. Trump.
And so it's not hard to believe that that represented a fair number of voters who were conflicted. Maybe the FBI letter played a role, but maybe those conflicted voters were more Republican-leaning and in the end broke for Trump.
Okay, JR, that was Mr. Franklin saying, you know, we got some work to do, we got some splaining to do, as well as pollsters nationally. Mm-hmm. He basically said two things. He found two types of Trump voters, those that, that he called shy and those that were much harder to predict. But he said, look, we were on the money for the Clinton vote, but he had him. Franklin had Trump at 40%, came in at 48%. What are your thoughts on the way Mr. Franklin says we got some splaining to do?
Well, it was interesting that he hit Clinton's number on the nose. And one theory that I heard was that Clinton was the de facto incumbent in this race because she was basically a continuation of the Barack Obama presidency. They were looking for a change election. So even though she really wasn't necessarily Obama, she was a continuation. And so people who, there's an old rule of thumb that if you have an incumbent and they're undecided, they're going to break 2-1 against the incumbent because they've already seen this person and decided, no, I'm not going to go for him. So there could be those late breakers could have gone that way. I interviewed Anson Kay, who used to work for Governor Doyle, has had some experience here in Wisconsin, worked for the Clinton campaign, was part of one of their contract, GMMB, the advertising firm, did some of the great ads that they did, of course, this race. They felt like the Comey letters, both of them, did damage, that they were in a good trajectory when the first one hit, that stalled it out and cut it. And the second one, even though it kind of, you know, quote unquote, cleared her of no more charges, it reminded voters very late of what they didn't like about Hillary Clinton, and it kind of fueled Trump voters. It reinvigorated them. So if you go back and look at Franklin's poll, he was in the field right after that first letter hit.
Yep.
And so if there were these late breakers that we saw that went for Trump, they got fueled by an event that happened 1 week after his last survey in the field. So that probably helped fuel some of that as well.
Well, Charles Franklin, who's respected nationally, said, look, with the outliers of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, we pollsters pretty much got it right. My question for you, it's really easy for us as journalists to write about poll numbers. Mm-hmm. Should we take them less seriously in 18 and 20?
I think every poll we've talked about in the last 6 months, I've said I take it with a grain of salt because of this. You know, there are all kinds of factors why you should look at polls. And as I always recommend, look at the trend. That will tell you sometimes more than the snapshot. Look at how it's done. There are a lot of polls that even we write about that we put out there because they're there, but they're not done well. And so we will note things like it's done with, you know, X with automated robocalls. Those are not great polls to look at, you know, but again, look at the trend of those. It gives you a little bit of a hint of what's going on. I prefer live call polls. I prefer ones done with half of, like Franklin does, a good chunk to half of the calls via cell phones. Mm-hmm. We're also having examination of polling nationally of the response rate. I mean, we get calls at home from pollsters. We can tell right away that the survey, I'm not going to answer it because I am somebody who covers politics. I'm not going to give you an opinion about
that's my answer
one
too.
Way or another. My wife doesn't want to answer the phone when it's a pollster. She doesn't want to sit through the call. So that's also a problem for them, the response rate. How do you address that and get more people to pick up the phone and say what they think?
Yeah, okay, new topic. We took last week off, and mm-hmm. there was a major story last week with two of three federal judges ruling that the reapportionment plan adopted in 2011 was indeed an illegal gerrymandering. I'm so intrigued when I read their decision. I don't know, it's 118 pages. They said the Republican plan had 38 safe GOP assembly seats, 14 leaning GOP, 10 swing seats, 4 lean Democrat, 33 safe Democratic seats. Now, within a few weeks, both sides, the challengers and the DOJ, have got to come up with proposed alternative. What do you think of some potential options here?
The sky's the limit. I mean, you could look to North Carolina, for example. There, it's a case of racial gerrymandering, all right? So it's different. But a federal court there, I believe, said draw new maps and hold new elections next year. Okay, that's a possibility. I'm not saying they will do that, but you could ask for that. You could ask for example, let the legislature draw new maps that are not as, you know, quote unquote bad, according to the standard the Dems came up with, and have new elections in 2018. There are all kinds of other questions that come up. What do you do for state senators, for example? You have to draw their maps. Oh, by the way, they go in staggered terms, so you'd have some maps that are good, some old. It's kind of a giant morass right now.
Yeah, it is.
The other thing is, we don't know if the U.S. Supreme Court will take this, if there'll be an appeal.
Yeah.
The AG said there will. If it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, right now it's 4-4. When would that court get it? Would they have a majority? Could they find a majority? There's a lot of hurdles to overcome before we will have to worry about a new map being in place and new elections being called in Wisconsin.
But Speaker Voss and others have said that these federal judges found a new standard mm-hmm. called the efficiency gap, which is a number of votes that are wasted mm-hmm. in districts that are stacked Republican or stacked Democrat. You saw Speaker Voss's statement. This is an entirely new legal precedent that he thinks, obviously, the state of Wisconsin is going to win eventually. This efficiency gap just intrigues the heck out of me.
Well, here's the thing. He is right. It is a new standard, and that's what the courts have been looking for. If you look at past redistricting lawsuits over partisan gerrymandering, not racial, but partisan gerrymandering, just number of Dems in seats and Republicans. The court went at one time was split 4-4 about whether, you know, they were going to vote, I believe, to overturn the map. Mm-hmm. And then Justice Kennedy said, I'm not there, but you could find a standard. You could find a standard that shows where they've gone too far. I don't know where it is.
Right.
If this standard holds,
yes,
that creates for the first time a standard by which all maps can be judged. Now, here's the thing. If you're a Republican, you may think, oh, I want to take this to court right away and have it overturned by the Supreme Court. If the U.S. Supreme Court were to uphold this, it could mean every state's maps could be challenged under this new standard. You could talk about some real chaos nationally. Likewise, Democrats, there's a risk for them as well. Other states where they have both houses in their hands, they could see their maps challenged. So we're holding the ball game here.
Okay, but let's close with agreeing. This is the first good news for Democrats in a long time.
Assembly Democrats, for absolutely. Now, they shouldn't bank. This is going to take them back to majority anytime soon.
Right.
But it could be a step out of the hole that they're in right now.
Okay, new subject. This week, DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp announced the proposed reorganization. DNR has lost 15% of its employees since 2001, according to the Fiscal Bureau. This would do a few things. It would create a new Bureau of Law Enforcement. it would reduce the number of scientists and place those scientists in a new Office of Applied Science. But the key thing that the environmentalists are concerned about, it would let CAFOs, the large farms, hire a consultant to not issue the permits, but draw up the permits. Mm-hmm. Now, JR, it's important to say this reorganization has got to be approved as part of the next budget. And finally, Secretary Stepp says, we're not talking about changing standards. There's no regulation changes. That really needs to be emphasized here. You see this plan as part of the next state budget?
Oh, absolutely. And Republicans have been angling for this for a while. They've now been in charge, other than like the brief period after the recalls in 2011. They've been in charge now for 5 going on 6 years. They have been at odds with the DNR over a number of things for a long time. Although I've got to say, Jim Holprin, former state senator from up north, said in one committee here I covered that you're not the first person to call it damn near Russia. You know, it's bipartisan times, complaints about the DNR. But they've got to find a way to be more efficient with fewer people, to do the things they've been doing for a long time, and how to reorganize. They also are taking a more business-friendly approach, if you will, to how regulations, trying to work toward resolutions rather than filing complaints or, you know, assessing fines. So it's a whole different ball game of what they're doing versus how it's happened in the past. How is this going to play out? I can tell you that the environmental groups will be nervous, upset, and suspicious of anything you try and do that they see as weakening environmental protections. But, for example, with these permits, how is that going to work in practice? Yes, these people are going to write them, these contractors, but they still have to be checked by the DNR.
Yes.
Will that free up staff to go out and do field checks? Who can they be a little more stringent? That's kind of like the practice. We'll see how that plays out for a while.
Okay, but the odds are pretty good that most of this reorganization is going to be part of the 2017-2019 budget, don't you?
I haven't heard any Republicans yet say, no, we don't want to reorganize the DNR.
Okay. Here's another thing that happened while I was stuffing my grandchildren with turkey last week. The Supreme Court said it would not name a special master to investigate the John Doe leaks. Mm-hmm. But what intrigued me, you only had 3 of the 7 justices voting and issuing that statement, that ruling. Justice Abramson dissented. You had 3 justices, Kelly, Walsh, Bradley, and Rebecca Bradley, not participating. Mm-hmm. Surprising?
A little bit. I mean, well, it was kind of a rebuke, if you will, of A.G. Schimmel, who went and sought the special master. Now, granted, he's kind of put in a position of, like, what are you going to do? Because there's this request out there to try and find this leak. And he aggressively up front said, we're going to go find these leaks to the Guardian, but didn't talk about the leaks that Eric O'Keefe gave the Wall Street Journal, which irritated Democrats.
Right.
So, but now the question is, well, what are you going to do, Brad Schimmel? Are you going to open up your own investigation? I've been asking DOJ, I've not gotten a response back about what they may do, because they still have that power. They still, you know, a law enforcement agency, but the court is not going to get involved in this for now.
All right. That's interesting. Okay, we finally have, when we last tape rewind 2 weeks ago, we didn't know the Senate Democratic leaders. Senate Democratic leader Jennifer Schilling has been reelected pending the recount. Mm-hmm. What have you heard the update on the recount?
There have been numbers that have moved a little bit, but so far we haven't seen like a flip of the lead. The thing we talked with Mike about absentee ballots, there were a number of those that were kind of momentarily challenged by
Vernon
Republicans.
Vernon County, I guess, yeah.
In one county, but they pulled that back because, well, the Board of Canvas said, no, this is clerk error, we're going to count these ballots. So we should be finishing up either today or maybe early next week and have that done. It looks like right now, barring a big swing, she's going to survive the recount.
Yeah. And the assistant Democratic leader is in her first term, Senator Janet Buley of
also a new
way
DNC
up north.
Member.
That's right. Thank you. New DNC. The caucus chair will be Senator Mark Miller of Madison, a former leader.
Who was a leader
Senate
during
Democrats.
The Act 10 fight in 2011.
Okay.
So
I don't see anybody from Milwaukee in the Senate Democratic leaders.
But this morning, Lena Taylor was reappointed to the Finance Committee by Jennifer Schilling. So that keeps a Milwaukee presence on finance, at least from the Senate Democratic side.
Although she may be the only Milwaukee Democrat on that 16-member Joint Finance Committee. Mm-hmm. Okay, share with us your stock reports, please.
So rising, Mark Bornham, Mike Rohrkost. We've reported this fall at West Politics that back in the summer, Robin Voss, the only speaker, told his members on finance, nobody's safe but John Nygren. Everybody's got to go out and earn their spots back on finance. There is some back drama to this about questions of loyalty and being part of the team and all these things that people have to gossip about in the Capitol. But in the end, everybody came back but Mike Schra from Oshkosh. And there's an opening because Dean Knutson retired. That put two openings and Robin Voss, put Mark Bourne and Mike Rorcost on there. Bourne, the early vibe on him from the spring was he's going to work hard in Legipalooza, they call it. It's the Assembly GOP effort to go out and work in other districts to win seats. So they go and do doors for their candidates and open seats.
They go all around the state to help GOP candidates.
They put miles on their cars, they put miles on the doors, and they help financially. Bourne was a big part of that effort, really worked hard. He was rewarded with this. Mike Rorcost, you may recall, led Voss's Dementia and Alzheimer's Task Force. Also has 30 years in private sector working in HR, job skill programs, those kinds of things. So he brings that to the table. For Schra, you know, it seems like part of it was there was a bill that came up on the floor at the end of session that would have changed how permits are handled for home improvement projects. Three members of finance, Schra, Chaya, and Loudenbeck, voted against the bill. They're not happy with it. Schra also took to Twitter after the end of the session to complain about a bill that basically was passing a law to prevent county executives, sitting county executives, to serve in the legislature at the same time. It was obviously aimed at the Democratic candidate for the 18th Senate District, which is also Schra's district. It seems like he was somewhat punished for, you know, straying, if you will, from party message. So that was part of it.
Okay, but a follow-up question. When Speaker Voss names these six Republicans, has he handpicked Republicans that will vote to either raise a gas tax or the vehicle, the $75 you and I pay to register? Is that one possible read on his members?
That is one of the questions I've asked people, because it seems like Voss wants to have a team that is loyal, that is going to carry out what he wants to do. Now, the gas tax will be a key test to that. Dale Cayenga, for example, is staying on, also retaining the vice chair. Would he support
also
a gas
tax? Also drafting changes to the tax code. Excuse me.
Would he vote for a gas tax? You know, so will the people who were kind of put out there say, okay, I got to earn it back, and they came back, will they now be more loyal, beholden, whatever you want to use for Robin? Or will he be like, you know what, I survived. I'm not afraid to, you know, buck the leadership a little bit. That'll be interesting to watch as the budget process goes on.
It will. Okay, mixed. State budget?
So the budget. So you and I both know from covering budgets for God knows how many years that when we get a deficit every 2 years in November, it's not real. This is a
comparison.
This is
the gap between what the agencies want and projected revenues. Excuse me.
And so we've seen huge numbers in the past. But this number is not real. It is kind of an agency wish list versus revenues. Once the governor gets all these agency requests, he will go through them, he'll produce a balanced budget. So, yes, the focus is going to be on the $693 million that we're short compared to requests versus revenue, because that's how we've always covered the budget. I mean, go back to 2002, when it's a $1.1 billion deficit. We've seen when Walker came in. When Walker came in, he wanted that big number, right?
He wanted the big number so he can say he beat it.
Okay, so that's all for us. You know, people have been around for a long time. The interesting stuff, though, is underneath of this, is that we're seeing continuous softness in corporate tax collections. Now, is it like a red flag? Nah, not yet. But it's a warning sign of, for some reason, and we're not alone, corporate tax collections are not coming where we thought they were going to be. They've revised them down now. We have another report coming out, I think, this month, a quarterly report on corporate tax collections. Maybe it's a better idea where we're at.
Yeah.
But if that keeps flagging, then the Walker administration says, okay, we have to do either some kind of cuts, hold the line on spending, or whatever, to get things balanced so we're still in the black come June 30th of next year. So that's something to watch.
Okay, the state budget, and that's interesting because remember Assembly Republicans promised a laptop to every ninth grader? Okay, falling.
So UV-Madison Research, this is one of our pride and joys of the state, right? Fell the first top five for research dollars the first time since 1972,
I think.
Before I was born. So, you know, that's noteworthy by itself. But what's interesting is we've talked about UV system for a while and the, I don't say at war, but the at odds they've been with lawmakers, right?
Yeah.
And there have been cuts to state aid to the university system in the last several budgets. Also happened under Democrats. The question has been, at what point do you see a result? Do you see like a drop-off? Or will there be a cliff where we have this good reputation, all of a sudden it just drops out? So this is a warning sign? Maybe. Governor Walker's quick to point out that, hey, they're still top 25 or whatever it was in U.S. World News Report, so it's still well-respected, but is this a canary in the coal mine for UV system that there, these cuts are going to add up eventually and there's going to be some real effect.
Dropping out of the top five, I think, is a big deal. It also gives Democrats a soundbite. We have at the other end of State Street this huge machine of research and development with federal dollars. I think dropping out of the top five is a significant issue.
But on that talking point, Dems have used it now for three cycles in a row and it hasn't broken through yet. Will it at some point? That's one of the big questions.
Yeah, but we had been number one, two, or three. We had been in the top five. Now we're out of the top five. I really like that as a falling pick. Okay, we only got a few seconds left. Let's talk about the end of the recount. What did you hear Mike say that things that may be coming up in the next few days?
More lawsuits? Yeah. Court action?
So we're in federal court, which could conceivably order a halt to the recount that has to be completed by December.
You just have to feel bad for clerks right now.
Yeah.
They're at the mercy of this whole thing.
Yeah, you really do. Well, the beat goes on. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.